The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
3/4 of families admit to having the phones with them when they're eating at the dinner table. 1/4 saying they don't even chat at the table anymore. The details came from a survey carried out by The Week Junior, a UK magazine for children. It also found that just 1/3 of families sat down to eat dinner together every day, and that 80% of children said they would like dinner to be a special time they could set aside to chat with their families. With us is Brendan Kelly, Professor of Psychiatry at Trinity College Dublin. Brendan, there will be people listening to this who will say, well, of course you shouldn't have phones at the table. It's a special time for family. Is there a counter argument that says this is no longer the Victorian era? People live in a social media world, and if they want to bring that to the family dinner, they should.
Anton, of course, we should not have our phones with us at the dinner table. It's funny, in this kind of research which rolls around from time to time, family dinner is seen as an absolute sacrosanct marker of the integrity of society and the viability of the family. Look, we all need to put down our phones a bit more and step away from them a bit more. I don't think civilization is particularly rushing into a crisis because of phones at the dinner table. This is something that comes up constantly. You know, this happens with every technology, as you might know. I was reading just the other day a complaint about a new technology at the time when it was introduced. It interfered with interests of children and activities. And they wrote, family conversation is the greatest sufferer with this new technology. Reading and music practice are close seconds, and children no longer engage in creative play. But what they're talking about there, Anton, is radio in 1935, when the exact same argument was put forward that it interfered with family conversation. And somehow humanity managed to struggle through the evils of radio and remain intact. So look, the research isn't wrong in a sense. We do need to put the phones away at dinner time. We need to look each other in the eye and talk to each other. But I don't think we're going to yank them entirely out of home life. That's simply not a realistic aim because, as you say, we're not in the Victorian era anymore.
Is there a big advantage? Because it is one of those things that is taken to be fact, and I don't know what the evidence is for it. Is there a big advantage to having everybody sit together semi-formally for meals? Or does it matter if you graze your way around the house?
Ah, well, there's a lot of research about the importance of family meals and sitting down together. But, and it is linked with, it's particularly good for children. It's linked with fewer conduct problems, fewer behaviour problems, ultimately less drug taking and less risky behaviour. But there is a chicken and egg problem with the conversation, because families in which there is family meal time together are more likely those offering a more generally stable environment. So we're not wrong to feel there are benefits with this. There certainly are benefits with our relatively uninterrupted family meal, but there are other things that are equally, if not more, important. And, you know, we shouldn't blame phones for aspects of human behaviour that have been present since time began. I mean, distraction existed in the world before social media was invented. We've always loved gossip, and the valley always had squinting windows.
So does that mean, therefore, that you might take the mobile phones as a symptom rather than a cause? That the reason people are bringing the phones to the table is because the discourse has long since died?
Well, yeah. So distraction is a fact of the human mind, and phones allow us to amplify that a little bit. We get tempted into it. So they are a symptom, a sign of something that's happening. And, you know, we should put the phones away at mealtime. We should do our best to do that. But it should not be a cast iron or a rigid rule, because very often, because of the nature of modern life, it is necessary to look at something on your phone. If there's a family conversation about an upcoming event, no one can remember the date of it, for example, then phones have a purpose, a very specific purpose. But broadly speaking, we do need to step away from them a bit. But we should step back from blaming phones intrinsically for aspects of human behaviour. We have always been, you know, always been very distracted, very distractible people. And we've always blamed the latest technology for that. Another example of a new technology was introduced once, and a psychiatrist wrote, a striking feature of the present age is incessant mental activity. Everything is hurry, bustle and excitement. And this is about a very old technology. They wrote, there is an amount of brain work in the present age far different in kind and far greater than degree than was ever known before. And that was written in 1875 about the advent of steam power and how that was speeding up and giving rise to what they called incessant mental activity. And like today, what Dr. Duncan said in that quote in 1875 was, this was more than ever seen before and of a different type of mental activity than ever seen before, which is exactly what we're saying about phones and social media now.
But presumably, though we look at that and sort of, as I did, laugh at it, there's probably truth in it. I mean, if you looked at the manner in which humans interacted pre-industrial revolution and post, particularly in the urban centres, rural agrarian humans probably had better interrelationships and had more storytelling and more discussion than their urban peers after the industrial era. Likewise, people with radios on at mealtimes, less likely to... Like, were they right?
Well, to a degree. But, you know, maybe we're having more mental activity all of the time. Maybe things are consistently getting worse. Maybe every generation is a degeneration and we've ended up in this degenerate state and that we've been so cognitively blunted we don't even realise it anymore. But you know what? I don't believe that. I believe that we are not being cognitively impaired. Plus, when you go back to those agrarian societies, do remember, people died very young. They might have had the negatives
but
of
in
technology.
The midst of a great conversation.
But they did. They didn't have the benefits of technology. And look, if we go back to 1875 to my friend Dr. Duncan, he says presciently that even if it was possible for the world to return to the condition of a century ago, this was before steam power, would any of us be willing to give up the advantages of our present state to secure such a result? The evil arises not from the contrivances, the steam power in his case, the phone in ours, but from abuses connected with their working and incidental to the introduction of the technology. And with the phones, it is not the phones that are the problem. We are the problem with how we choose to use the phones. We are capable of setting them to one side, looking each other in the eye and having a conversation, and we should do that.
Now, what happens if in your attempt to do that, you fall foul of Pavlovian conditioning, where the child begins or the family begins to think the only time that I'm not allowed to have fun on my phone, either on social media or gaming or whatever it is I like, is when I have to sit for this deeply dull family dinner. Doesn't that set up a cascade of association that is counterproductive?
It can do. And, you know, we know that restrictive phone policies are not always the way forward. It is like trying to hold back the ocean with your bare hands. A paper appeared just last month in the Lancet Regional Health looking at schools with restrictive phone policies. It looked at 20 schools that had restrictive phone policies for students, 10 that had permissive policies. And what it found was no difference in mental health in the children in schools with restrictive policies. And fascinatingly, no difference in screen time. Because students find ways to use their phones even with restrictive phone policies. And the authors of the paper very generously say that restrictive phone policies need to be reconsidered. We certainly need to look at their impact in practice. And attempting to restrict young people's access to phones doesn't always have the desired effect. And certainly the evidence suggests it doesn't reduce screen time or improve well-being.
But expand on that slightly, Brendan. Attempting to restrict their access in that instance doesn't work because they find other methods of getting the access. Does effective reduction of screen time work if you actually manage to reduce the net time that they're on screen?
But it's virtually impossible to reduce net screen time with phones now because phones are so ubiquitous and so intrinsically integrated into human life. You would literally need to lock people up in something like a prison. The nature of living, the nature of communication, the nature of being has changed with the advent of technologies, as it always has. So trying to hold that back and genuinely prevent people accessing their phones isn't good. What we can do is teach good phone use habits. Try and encourage children to set them aside for times of learning, for times of communication. That will have a benefit. It would be helpful if students did not have their phones in classrooms and maybe the screen time moved from classrooms to outside of classroom times, and we should continue to try to achieve that. We should put them aside at mealtimes, look each other in the eye and try to have a conversation as we did in an entirely imagined nostalgic past.
And I like the entirely imagined a text saying, Anton, steam engines and radio didn't enable young kids to access violence and pornography on social media apps. We are facilitating the destruction of our kids' mental well-being, which I think goes to your point about correct phone behavior and device use rather than the device itself.
Yeah, on the plus side, though, I would point out that over the past 20 years or so, Since the introduction of these technologies, we know that globally rates of self-harm, for example, and rates of suicide have fallen. We know that although a lot more work needs to be done in that area, and even one suicide is one too many, but positive change is possible. And we really need to redouble our efforts to consolidate that progress and really do more to help people in distress and people who are bereaved. But positive change is possible. We also know that in parallel with the introduction of mobile phones, young people's involvement in sports, team sports, is increasing every year. It has never been higher than it is now. And that mobile phones are part of that, with WhatsApp groups and kids standing around after matches comparing photos. So mobile phones are and social media are so integrated into life. We do need to use them wiser and better. But there are many, many positive indicators for young people's mental health, particularly the participation in group sports, which is now at record levels.
Tech saying, I am infuriated by this defending of smartphones. There is no comparison between the interactive properties of the internet and the passive consumption of radio and TV. And there again, another one says, Anton, I went to a friend's house 20 years ago. We were having dinner, so I set the table and they laughed and said, we don't sit at the table, we watch TV. This was completely alien to me. Even having dinner on my own, I'd sit at the table rather than sit in front of the TV. Another, the big problem with mobile phones is the lack of education on their pluses and minuses, and our education system is ignoring them instead of educating the students on them.
Yes, well, I 100% agree with that. And it's not so much that I'm defending the use of smartphones in adolescents or students, simply saying that it is an almost inevitable fact of life. We need to educate people about proper use of phones so that they contribute positively to functioning and mental health rather than negatively. Holding back the sea with our bare hands simply won't work. Engaging young people as the intelligent, thoughtful human beings that they are is the way forward.
Brendan, thank you very much. That is Brendan Kelly, who is Professor of Psychiatry in Trinity College, Dublin. Now, no.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.